Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks, and I'm joined, as always, by Ben. How are you doing, Ben?
I am doing well, Scott. What a privilege it is to hang out here with our very own auto editor.
A privilege.
Yeah,
we need to figure out a definite title for you someday so that I can say, I'm here with Ben. He's the CEO of something.
I think that works. The CEO of something.
That's President and CEO of what?
You know what I would like to be the president and CEO of?
What?
Stunts.
Stunts?
Yes. Acts of daredeviltry. Death-defying things.
Really, backyard daredevil.
Backyard, front yards even. That's a bit of daring do.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Are you really, though? I mean, did you jump bikes and skateboards, anything like that?
You know, it's interesting that you ask, Scott, because I had a fascinating conversation with one of my female friends about this earlier before our podcast, and she told me it was a guy thing, and I completely disagree because I, of course, assumed that everybody of a certain age and youth thinks it's a great idea to ride a bike off of something, onto something, or over something.
Yeah, I think, you know what, I have to disagree. I agree with her, I disagree with you, I think.
Really?
Because I'll tell you, I don't know if I've ever seen a female jump other kids, bicycles, toy cars, whatever. I don't know if I've ever seen it.
Now you're talking about your own.
You know what? A lot of people will say, you know, I used to do that all the time. I was a real tomboy, or whatever. And
sure.
But I just never witnessed that when I was growing up. I just didn't. I wasn't around people like that. Now, later in life, I would spend summers on the farm in Indiana. Mm-hmm. We had four wheelers and we had snowmobiles and we had all kinds of fun toys and horses and everything. And I would say that my female cousin was probably even more daring than I was. You know, jumping out of the hayloft in the barn and that type of thing. But she was good at stuff like that.
What's the craziest stunt you did in your childhood?
Craziest stunt?
Or one of?
You already know the answer to this because we've talked about this.
We did talk about this
is
briefly.
So stupid, and please don't do this. I jumped over other children on my bike. I had them lay down in a row, and I jumped over kids. I figured how far I could jump, how many kids I could jump, and I also took my turn laying on the ground as other friends jumped over me as well. Because
that's only fair.
Well, we were trying to imitate the person that we're going to talk about today, Evel Knievel.
Evel Knievel.
Evel Knievel.
The evil one.
That's right. The evil one, yeah. Honestly, Ben, it was such a dumb idea now that I look back that there's so much could have gone wrong at that point, but didn't. We were lucky, but I have a feeling that, you know, somewhere in America that happened, or, you know, worldwide that happened, and with tragic results. But nothing like that happened where we were, and you know, I guess worst case scenario, we got a skinned knee or a cut on our chin. It's about the worst.
Well, the fellow we're talking about today grew into his famous persona by avoiding that question, should I do this?
That's right. He just kind of did it no matter what.
Yeah. Could I?
Yeah. Could I? Well, yeah, that was more of his motto,
that was
motto,
his,
I guess.
More of his motto. Yeah.
Sure.
So for everyone who's unfamiliar with Evel Knievel, somehow you might not know his name. You might not know exactly the parameters of his biography, but I'm sure people are familiar with him if they saw a photo or they saw an act that he did.
No doubt. I mean, the guy's legendary. He's Evel Knievel is synonymous with this type of stunt, this motorcycle stunt, bicycle jumps, you know, that kids do, you know, anything to imitate what he does. And a lot of what we see in popular culture in this type of area comes from Evel Knievel's early stunts, I guess, in the late 60s and early 70s, all the way through up until about 1980, I believe.
So what's the span of his career?
Really, it goes from, I would say, as far as in the public eye,
sure,
it would be probably from about 1965, I believe, up until about 1980.
Okay.
So that's a pretty long career for someone doing something like this, and especially when we discuss some of the results of his stunts.
Before we get into the actual stunts themselves, which I know that's what we're waiting for, you and I and all the listeners, we just have to say a bit of trivia, and this was very interesting when you had mentioned it to me, but I didn't get the whole story. He was not born Evel Knievel.
No, no, his name wasn't Evel Knievel. In fact, the name Evel was given to him by local authorities, and we'll get to that in just a moment.
Okay.
So you can imagine what's coming here.
Yeah.
But he was born Robert Craig Knievel, and he was born in Butte, Montana. And I think he was raised by his grandparents, from what I remember. And I think he stole a motorcycle when he was 13. He had kind of a checkered past here, Ben, and you'll see that kind of carries over later in life as well. He was always on the edge, really. But he stole his first motorcycle when he was 13, a Harley Davidson. He was kind of in and out for these little thefts, like stealing hubcaps and things, and that's where he got his nickname. The local authorities picked him up so many times, they said, you know what, we're going to call you, it rhymes with his last name, of course.
Evel. Knievel.
Knievel, right. And there was another guy in town that they called Awful Knoffel. Because his last name was Knoffel.
No,
and
really?
Honestly.
Knoffel?
Yeah, that's the kind of the lore around this. Now, there's a lot of different sources for all this information
sure.
that we got here today. So some of it, I find some of the statistics that we'll talk about, you know, the number of cars, the distances, you know, the how many snakes were involved, how many sharks were involved, that type of thing. We'll, I know you're looking at me puzzled here, but we'll talk about like how the, actually we won't talk about it. Let's just get it out of the way right now.
All right.
A lot of those stats are greatly varied. I mean, the distances, the success, why he was doing these jumps, that type of thing, a lot of that was just not recorded. He had several very famous jumps that were televised on ABC, the Wide World of Sports.
Yes.
He had seven of them, as a matter of fact. And we'll talk about those, maybe not each one of them, but he did hundreds of jumps in his career, and you only hear about a few, and mostly hear about these failures, these spectacular failures that he had, because they were so spectacular, because he set himself up for this. He was always doing something a little bit farther. You know, if he'd jump 15 cars, he'd want to jump 16 cars the next time.
Yeah.
If he was jumping 13 buses, he'd want to jump 14 buses the next time.
And these are like school buses, right?
No, like big Greyhound type buses, tour buses. These are big ones. Everything was a little bit more dramatic the next time, and the guy was, and this is what made him so great, he was all about the showmanship. He was definitely a showman. He was a big talker, you know, a big stuffer.
Sure.
He would always be talking about the next jump he's going to do, he was always promoting himself, keeping his name, not only in the media, but just, you know, the general public, like making himself endeared to everybody, you know, like, I'm going to do this, I can do it. He never went back on his word. He always did what he said he would do. He's a really cool guy.
Yeah? Well,
yeah.
Let's go into one of his famous failures. You want to do that?
Yeah. You know, I can lead into it fairly quickly here, starting off with his first jump. And it's not as it's not necessarily a spectacular failure, but it's a failure.
Okay.
And I do want to stress, though, that all of his jumps weren't failures. He had many successful ones, but we'll talk about some of these because, well, that's what makes him so famous.
You know? Let's go to the failures.
Sure.
Let's follow his own life.
Sure,
let's start out with maybe an unsuccessful attempt, and then let's go from there to some of the really cool ones he did.
No, not a problem. I mean, he started with his first jump. It was in Moses Lake, Washington, and he had moved out of Butte because his reputation had just preceded him so much that he just felt he needed a new beginning.
Okay.
Right? So he's there with his family. He's operating he's running a Honda motorcycle dealership. And he's trying to drum up business. So he jumps. He decided he's going to jump 40 feet of parked cars, a box of rattlesnakes, and this is where it gets unclear. One or two mountain lions. I'm not sure which.
One or two. The stats vary.
Yeah, that's right. He cleared the cars, hit the box of rattlesnakes, and wiped out. I don't know if he fell into the box of rattlesnakes. I don't know how the deal on this exactly.
Uh-huh.
No photos or anything like that. But I guess he must have missed the mountain lions because we're still talking about him.
Sure.
But honestly, that just kind of got his name out there, and people said, hey, this guy's doing some pretty cool stuff. You know, we've never seen anything like this.
They probably said, this guy's crazy.
And he gets his, I bet you they did, and,
yeah.
and he gets his inspiration from someone that we had mentioned on a podcast a while back, Joey Chitwood, who ran an auto thrill show. He's a stunt car driver, the Joey Chitwood Auto Thrill Show, and I saw that when I was a kid. It was really spectacular. We'll talk about that maybe in a complete episode some other point. But he was one, Joey Chitwood was one of Knievel's main, I guess, inspirations to do this kind of work. He just loved that show. So here he is doing these spectacular stunts on a motorcycle. And he decided that after this, you know, I can do this.
Yeah.
He got together a band of stuntmen with him, motorcycle stuntmen, and they toured. And it was kind of all over the Northwest, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And they called it Bobby Knievel and his Motorcycle Daredevil Thrill Show. And I guess they wanted to change it, or he wanted to change it to Evil Knievel and his Motorcycle Daredevil. So that's what they went with. And I think right away they had some accidents, or he had an accident, I should say.
Uh-huh.
And the group kind of broke apart after just maybe a month or two. And later he went out kind of as a solo act. And then in 1967... he made his first appearance on ABC, and this is kind of monumental because this is his first national appearance on ABC.
Wide World of Sports?
You know what? At this point, I don't know if it was necessarily the Wide World of Sports. It was just ABC coverage of another motocross event.
Okay.
So he's there doing this kind of an exhibition before the big event that happens. And it's funny, he comes in, he's in like just a regular suit. He's got his hair all clean cut and everything.
Uh-huh.
Totally doesn't look like what he does later in life, but real young guy, real clean cut, military looking almost. And he jumped 16 cars successfully in Gardena, California on, I think it was in May of 1967. Well, by the end of that year, this is December 31st, that's when he made his, well, you know what, I'm gonna kind of backtrack here, but this is December 31st, 1967 is when he made his big national debut, I guess you would say the biggest splash he could make.
Okay.
And this is jumping the fountains at Caesar's Palace.
Oh yes.
And
yes.
Now, the interesting thing about the Caesar's Palace jump is that it wasn't originally aired. It wasn't aired live on ABC originally. It's ABC's famous for airing this clip of mm-hmm. the failed attempt, and we'll talk about the attempt right now, but. What happened was that there's this kind of convoluted way that it was eventually picked up by ABC. Remember I told you he was a big showman. He's always trying to encourage, you know, people to watch him and try. He's a big showman, I guess trying to drum up attention is what he's always trying to do.
Yes.
Well, what he did was he's there in Las Vegas to watch a fight, saw the fountains, decided it would be a good idea to jump them. This is in like November. And by December 31st, he had it set up. He's going to do it on New Year's Eve in front of Caesar's Palace. Now, you think that's pretty remarkable because he has no contacts. He's really just a guy jumping motorcycles, right, at this point.
Right.
No name made for himself nationwide. What he did was he made up a fictitious company. He called himself, hang on a second, Evil Knievel Enterprises. And then he also had three people call in, or possibly himself, I don't even know the details, as lawyers to the CEO of Caesar's Palace and say, yeah, we're trying to get things all taken care of here. We want to get Evil in position for the show on December 31st. It's going to be great. Really, you know, getting the excitement, making it look like there's this big company behind him, but really it's just him wanting to jump this fountain.
It's a hustle.
It is. It's a big-time hustle, right? And he says, all right, well, I'm going to have people also call from, quote, ABC TV and Sports Illustrated and say that they're interested in covering the event for us. So, uh-huh. You know, there's going to be media coverage. And, well, the CEO of Caesar's Palace got really excited about this. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of coverage mm-hmm. and this is going to be good for business. So after he agrees to let him jump the fountains, you know, because here's this professional motorcycle racer, you know, with Evil Knievel Enterprises, mm-hmm. Then Evil goes back to ABC and tries to backsell it and say, hey, I'm going to be doing this jump at Caesar's Palace. You want to cover it? And ABC said, no, I don't think so. We're not sure if it's going to be really all that spectacular.
Whoops.
Yeah, so he's got all this stuff lined up, and he's very crafty, this
yeah.
guy. Very
yeah.
crafty. So he hires a couple of his friends, director John Derrick, and his actress wife, Linda Evans, and they're the ones who actually ran the cameras during, you know, that famous footage that you see. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
Yeah, I have seen it.
The Caesar's Palace stuff mm-hmm. is it's shocking, really, when you see it. He flies down this ramp. I don't know what speed, 90 miles an hour, whatever it is. Hits the ramp. He actually does clear. Now, remember, there's 15,000 people watching this in front of Caesar's Palace. He hits the ramp. He actually clears the 151 feet that he had to go for the fountain. He missed the landing. And this happens over and over again in his career. He missed the landing, and he tumbled, you know, went over the handlebars. The bike's luckily sliding in front of him, I believe, in the shot that I saw. And he slid something like 165 feet until he stopped. His motorcycle's, catches on fire, is smoking all over the place. very dramatic. he's in a coma for 30 days. And he broke, I don't know, he broke his pelvis, he broke all kinds of bones. I had a list of the bones here, I don't have it anymore. Sorry, it's fine. Somewhere around here. But anyways, that's kind of like the path that this guy's career took from right from the beginning. I mean, he was just bold. He was really outrageous with the way he planned things, and he never did anything small.
He had, what do they call it? He had chutzpah.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
He did. And, you know, what's funny, you know, Linda Evans, she's, of course, actress, went on to do a lot of different things, a lot of different television movies.
Sure.
She is the one who actually had the most famous shot of him hitting the ramp. She's got the head-on shot, and she stuck with him through the whole thing, which is, it turns out to be a remarkable piece of footage. If you ever...
Oh, to follow through the slide?
She followed him all the way through the slide. She followed, I guess, his tumbling body on the ground, but... it's pretty remarkable that she's able to keep with him. And she was on that camera because I guess John was better at tracking him on the ramp on the other side.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he would have been on the other side, and who knows what kind of shot you would have ended up with. It might not have been the same.
So here's a good question,
yeah.
Because his story isn't over at this point.
No.
What happens on day 32?
Well, he contacts the media. Of course, you know, everybody's super excited about, you know, well, this guy is doing some incredible stuff. You know, again, it's just like what happened in Washington. Everybody's very excited about it. And, you know, he's got his name out there now. He's very credible.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to flip through my notes here. But he's definitely he's contacted the media. He's trying to set up the next jump is what he's doing.
Yeah.
If you can believe that. I mean, here's the guy just fresh out of a coma.
Still in the hospital, really.
Yeah, he's got, you know, I would bet that he's, you know, still has broken bones that he can't even move with. You know,
they're
probably telling him he can't walk at this point.
Sure.
And he's already setting up his next stunt.
See, I guess for our listeners, we could also take a moment to say we love this guy because the very idea of pretending to have your own company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which he never got arrested for this scam.
No, he didn't.
And going into a coma for a month.
Yeah.
A lot of people would have given up at that point.
I would think so, yeah. I would think that somebody would say, you know what, I need to reinvestigate what I'm doing here.
Or maybe at least say, gosh, I hope I'll be able to walk again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or something like that.
This made him wildly popular.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to ride that wave. And, of course, you know, here he is. He's in this coma. You're just coming out of this coma. Extremely popular. You know, of course, ABC, of course, bought the footage of this spectacular jump and accident. And, of course, I think they ended up paying more than they would have to just originally cover the event if they had had a contract with him. So it kind of worked out in his favor, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's also kind of something going on with there was a policy that he had taken out. He tried to take out 10 policies against himself.
Life insurance?
Yeah, with somebody, and I guess it wasn't allowed, and the person that did this got fired, and Evil actually went back and said, you know what, I'll just keep the one, pay out the one, and, you know, this accident insurance policy.
Oh, okay, so it's not life insurance, it's an accident insurance,
and, you know, give the guy his job back, and I guess they did give him his job back. So, he, you know, he's a stand-up guy also. He didn't, you know, fight for, you know, 10 times the money that, you know, and let this guy lose his job. The guy went back to work, and, you know, he said, hey, I'll just take one, you know, I'll follow the rules. So in some ways, you know, he did follow the rules, and I think it just came down to the point that he didn't want to see somebody get hurt from his stunt. You know, he didn't want to see some guy lose his job.
However, let's not paint him as a saint. He was a pretty controversial person,
right? He was, yeah. Yeah, he was. Unfortunately, he was also a drinker, and he went through, you know, he got hepatitis C, had a liver transplant.
Mm-hmm.
He got in trouble for, I think he beat one of his, I don't remember who it was. It was like a press agent or something like that.
Okay.
Allegedly, I should say allegedly.
Sure.
But I think he's actually served time or something for it. So anyways,
So no saint.
No, not by any means. No,
yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, seemed like a pretty good guy. I mean, just me looking at him from, you know, the point of view that, you know, everybody else had with the media coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that I've read and everything that I've seen. I don't know, just seemed like a stand-up guy.
And now it's, what's interesting is when you were telling us earlier about the variance between statistics about his jumps, it occurred to me that really what we're seeing is the transformation of something from a real-life series of events to this kind of icon or this legend, or, you know,
yeah.
in a few decades from now, Evel Knievel could very well be Pecos Bill status or something. You know,
I guess. I just don't know how many kids these days hear about Evel Knievel, because when I was growing up, I heard all about him because there were Evel Knievel toys.
Mm-hmm.
There were Evel
mm-hmm.
Knievel, action figures. There were Evel Knievel motorcycles. I should say bicycles that look like motorcycles. There were... I don't know, Evel Knievel kites and mm-hmm. Halloween costumes and pinball machines. And he claims at the end of his life, he said that he made, I think he said $300 million on just the merchandising of the Evel Knievel brand. So unbelievable amount of merchandising. And you got to think of the time when that was, too. This is in the 1970s, really.
So that probably actually was $300 million
yeah,
in
yeah,
buying
70s
power,
and,
too.
70s and through the 80s, I guess, yeah. because you know he wasn't out there jumping in the 80s, but you know his merchandise was still selling to the people that remembered him from the 1960s and the 1970s.
And weren't you telling Jerry and I earlier that you can still find some of these items on the internet or something, but there's definitely a premium attached to them now.
Yeah, if you have the original toys, they're very valuable. I mean, like in the $500 to $550, $600 range for the cycle that you rev up and release, and it does a jump. And he's got a little action figure on it, that mm-hmm. you can balance him on the seat, or you can put him over the handlebars, whatever you'd like to do.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they re-released that toy, and I think, I want to say in 2005, and I think it's like $50 or something like that. So you can get a newer version, but if you want the original, it's going to cost you big.
What was one of your favorite of his events?
Of his events?
Of his stunts, his jumps?
You know, I don't know, because I mean, it's funny, Ben. I was fairly young
sure.
when all this happened, but I have a pretty clear memory of watching some of this stuff happen. Now, I don't know if I was seeing repeats or reruns
mm-hmm.
in the 80s even, or the late 70s of stuff that he'd done earlier, but I really do remember, watching ABC Wild World of Sports and seeing Evel do his thing. now, again, I can't point to a specific time or anything. It's just, it's a fuzzy memory, but I really do.
I'm going to date myself just a second here, and I hope you still respect me as your podcast colleague. I, as a younger person, was watching The Simpsons, and they have some ongoing jokes about that, in his own Evel Knievel-esque, can I say that?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, well, it's done.
It's done.
Bart Simpson tries to jump Springfield Gorge repeatedly on a skateboard for an episode, and then there are also other stunt jumping characters.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was but a wee lad, in this watching this, my dad told me that it was based on a real person.
Yeah.
And, I don't know if I've told you this, Scott. During my childhood, my father lied to me for recreation. and he was very good at it. So I became quite cynical quite early. And he told me that Evel Knievel was a real person, and just the name alone, I wasn't buying it.
Oh, sure.
So for years, I thought it was something my dad made up.
Yeah, there's no way, right?
Right.
No way someone's going to name their kid Evel.
Well, Awful Knoffel, Evel Knievel.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, nicknames. He should have clarified that it was a nickname.
I thought he was kniddin' me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All
right.
Pretty good.
Oh, no.
Not bad. But he taunted you for sport, is what you're saying.
Sure.
Yeah. I guess that's something that fathers do.
Well, in his defense, he was very good at it, and he's very funny. I look back on it now and I laugh. But I bring up this father-son thing by way of a messed up segue, because I want to also talk about Evel Knievel's legacy
mm-hmm.
with his son.
Okay.
Who's done some of the same jumps, is that correct?
He has. He's done most of them with the exception of two. He's done, his name is Robbie Knievel. And Evel actually has four kids. He has two daughters, two sons. Robbie Knievel is kind of the one who's following in his father's footsteps. He does jumps. I've seen him jump something in Las Vegas recently. I want to say Volcano in front of, I don't remember which hotel.
I've never been to Vegas.
In front of some hotel, and I'm sure everybody's saying, I know which one it is. But
yeah.
Anyways, I've seen Robbie jump a few different things, and I think he jumped at an amusement park recently to commemorate an Evel Knievel roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe some of the most recent things. But the only two jumps that he has not completed of his father's career, in addition to just other jumps that he does around the nation, he has not completed the Snake River Canyon Sky Cycle jump, and he has also not recreated the Wembley Stadium jump, both of which were Evel Knievel failed jumps. Now Robbie has successfully completed the other ones that his dad failed.
Wow.
Yeah, so I don't know. That says something that he's, you know, he's going back and doing his father's jumps and doing them the right way.
Even the kid won't quit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I guess he has plans to do, from what I know, he's going to do the Wembley Stadium jump in London. He's got plans to do that one. And the Snake River Canyon Sky Cycle jump, I don't know if he's going to do that or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those were both, I would say, pretty big failure jumps on his dad's part. But, again, the guy's out there doing it. He's trying it. So I don't know if you can really call any of this a failure, but we just didn't stick to landing on a lot of these. Now, the Sky Cycle jump, that was in 1974. I'll just do these quick. I won't go into it at length like the Caesar's Palace thing. In 1974, he was paid $6 million to... Now, this is how big his name got. Remember, he went from making up a fake corporation to jump the fountains with no backing, really, and paying for all the coverage himself. Now he's getting paid $6 million to jump the Snake River Canyon in Idaho, and he had to clear 1,600 feet, which is unbelievable. But he's in this rocket, especially made rocket-propelled motorcycle, which they called the Sky Cycle.
Okay.
And the Sky Cycle was going to, you know, launch out. He was going to eject from it and parachute safely to the other side. So the Sky Cycle was also going to parachute down. After the rocket launched, the parachute for the Sky Cycle ejected. It malfunctioned. It came out too early, and the whole thing just floated down into the base of the canyon. And of course, you know, didn't make it across because of the parachute. It ended abruptly. You know, of course, he made $6 million for that, but. You know, he never attempted that again.
I would totally do that.
Yeah, would you really?
You'd ride a
rocket over a canyon with just a parachute?
Listen, Scott, I don't believe in reincarnation.
What?
I'm only here
what
once.
What if it rolled off the launch pad and just shot itself straight into the bottom of the canyon?
Well, that's a good question.
But yeah, I know. Okay. Well,
yeah, you know, if I was a person who thought more about things, maybe I would rethink it. But it just seems like such a cool thing. I know.
Now,
it's the six-year-old in me.
You would
it's
do that, you wouldn't, but you wouldn't drive up Pike's Peak fast.
No. Pike's Peak takes that takes a long time, and there are more curves.
Okay.
Something about being in a rocket makes me feel safer.
Really?
And there's a parachute. I know it sounds stupid,
this is,
but
no,
it's
no,
true.
It's interesting. I just find that interesting that you would put yourself in a rocket, a one-man rocket that's pointed over a canyon with a parachute.
Over
versus,
a canyon.
Versus getting in a car and driving up a hill kind of fast.
Kind of fast.
Okay, really fast. But
yeah, don't act like we were talking about a different uphill.
And it's
climb.
Like no control versus all the control in the world.
What about you, my friend? What would you do
in the rocket car?
Yeah, would you
I,
do it?
No, I don't think so.
$6 million.
Oh well, $6 million. You know what? I may do it for $6 million, even now. And that was in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
What would that be adjusted to now?
I imagine it would, just because of inflation, it would have to be. It would have to be more, right?
Sure.
I mean, I feel safe saying
that.
I
was waiting for a number, but yeah,
no,
that's okay. That's good. Okay.
I don't want to change
and,
it too
okay,
much.
Okay, we'll get on to the next one.
Yeah, yeah.
The next one was another unsuccessful stunt. And this one, this is possibly the most famous stunt of his career. You'll understand why when I get to the end of this. But now, the Caesar's Palace, that was a big deal, but that launched his career, really,
right,
in the public eye. This one was... Again, probably the most famous one. Wembley Stadium in London. He was going to jump 13 London buses in front of 70,000 fans in the stadium. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he's got 70,000 fans there. He's got a Harley Davidson. He hits the ramp going 90 miles per hour. Barely makes it over the 13th bus. Hits the ramp bad. He doesn't hit it in the right spot. And I think somebody said something that, you know, like maybe there's a piece of wood that shifted or something like that, but I'm not going to say for sure that happened. I've seen that. You can watch video of this. Again, he tumbles, has a terrible, terrible accident at the end of this ramp. Doesn't slide quite as far as he did in Vegas for the Caesar's Palace thing. But the awful part about this is when he lands, he stops. He stops sliding. His motorcycle then slams into him after that. So he's got a Harley Davidson that trails him and hits him on the ground after he had stopped. Now, this is unbelievable. You'd think he's dead. When you see him, he's laying there in a heap on the ground. People are running over to him. The motorcycle is next to him. the guys go to grab it and pull it away, and you know, like the throttle accelerates, you know, because they grabbed it on the handle at the wrong spot. Mm-hmm. It's very dramatic. You think he's dead. I guess just a few seconds later, he stands up, or minutes later, he insists that he's going to get up and walk out of the stadium. So he stands up, and he's got broken bones. You know, I don't know what exactly broken bones again. I think he has, you know what, I'm not even going to pretend like I know what bones, because he broke so many bones. he gets up. He says, and not only does he get up and want to walk out, he says, hand me a microphone. So they hand him a microphone so he can address the crowd. And this is what he says. This is a direct quote. He says, you are the last people in the world who will ever see me jump. I will never, ever, ever, ever jump again. I am through. And that's it. Hands the microphone back and walks out.
And earlier you had said, Evel Knievel always kept his word.
He did. He did. However, he didn't stick to this. Now, if he promised he was going to do a jump or something like that, he would stick to it. But
yeah.
he couldn't stay away from jumping. Now, after this horrible accident, if you ever watch it, it's terrible.
Yeah.
He did come back, and he then successfully jumped 14 Greyhound buses at Kings Island Amusement Park in Ohio.
Wow.
So he came back, and that jump, that particular jump, is the highest-rated telecast of ABC's Wide World of Sports that they ever had.
Do you think he was addicted to adrenaline?
He was. I mean, the guy broke, and I know the number, he broke 40 bones, and, you know, that could be more, could be one or two less, I don't know, but 40 Jeez. Bones in his career, and that's, I believe he's in the Guinness Book of World Records for that. you know, he spent, of course, he had the concussion. I want to say concussion. It's a coma. He was in a coma for 30 days.
Right.
He just was always up in the ante. He was always showboating that next thing that he was going to do.
He was always in action or in traction.
Yeah, that's right. Like, what's his name? Lance. Is it Lance Murdoch? Is that right?
Is that the one?
the Simpsons guy, right?
Yes.
Yeah, the Simpsons guy. I have it marked here. I'll take a look. But, you know, Captain Lance Murdoch, that was it.
Captain Lance Murdoch.
If he's not in action, he's in traction.
Yep.
That's it. And, you know, there's another parody of that, and that's the one that I used to watch, Super Dave Osborne. I don't know if you know Super Dave Osborne.
Enlighten me.
Super Dave Osborne dressed exactly like Evel Knievel and did a lot of spectacular stunts like that. It was a comedy show. You know, there's a lot of mannequins dressed as Super Dave Osborne taking a lot of abuse. And he'd never be really hurt. I mean, he would be hurt in every show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the accident would go terribly wrong,
or right.
Rather the stunt would go terribly wrong, but you know he would always come back the next episode and be fine. It was very funny stuff. I guess you had to see it, but the Super Dave Osborne Show, I think, is what it was called.
Mm-hmm.
Very funny. He dressed exactly like him. I mean, it was a direct ripoff.
$6 million. You know, I want to go around and ask people if they would attach themselves to a rocket and a parachute. I don't think that's unreasonable. I think you would do it.
Yeah.
Where else are we going with Evel?
Well, I tell you, that's probably about it. I mean, his son is still jumping.
Sure.
Evel just couldn't do it anymore after, I think it was like about 1980, 1981.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in Chicago, he tried to jump a tank of sharks, and there was a mishap there. I think they said something about that was being, it was inspired by the movie Jaws, because that was right about that time.
Okay.
Jaws 2.
That makes sense.
So I think that was about it for him. That just mm-hmm. ended it. He unfortunately passed away when he was 69 years old, and that was in 2007. So very recently.
Very recently.
And I think he died of diabetes and an incurable lung condition. And of course, you know, just the abuse that his body had taken. I'm sure that it was pretty rough on his body.
Sure. Yeah.
So, but remarkable career, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of, you know, we mentioned legacy of his son. There's more than that, Ben. They call him they think he's kind of like the father of the X Games, because that's the type of stunts this guy would do. These bold, brash, mm-hmm. you know, just you can't imagine these people are doing this type of stunt. So a lot of the X fans, athletes, think of him as the father of the X Games, really.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, there's the MTV show Jackass.
Yes,
that's kind of the same type of thing. And Evel knew early on that a lot of people were going to watch him do this stuff because, you know, certain people wanted to see him make it, others just couldn't believe it and they were just going to watch it. And then,
however,
there were some that just wanted to see him crash.
And some of those people are NASCAR fans.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and honestly, you know, that's exactly what you see in these shows like Jackass and well, I mean, X Games and things like that. You see people doing things that, you know, like you're going to watch just to see what happens.
Right.
There's kind of that curiosity, that, I don't know, rubbernecking type mentality, which I'm guilty of it. I'd like to see, I mean, I don't like to see it happen, but I'll watch to see if this guy's going to make it for sure.
Are you really?
I'd love to watch stunt shows.
Okay, stunt shows.
Yeah,
I,
and you
I
know
thought
what?
You meant rubbernecking your accidents.
No, I truly appreciate like a stunt done well that mm-hmm. goes well because you know, there's a lot of careful planning. It's involved. But also, you know, there's just that little bit of like, oh, man, I wonder if this guy's going to make it. And what's going to happen if he doesn't?
Yeah. What happened to his motorcycle then?
What happened to his motorcycle?
I mean, I'm sure he wrecked many motorcycles.
Oh, yeah. He did have a motorcycle of choice at the end of his career, mm-hmm. towards the end of his. Now, he went from, I think he had a Honda. I want to say a Norton, maybe. Norton is the name sticking out in my head right now. He had a few different motorcycles throughout his career.
Okay.
He ended up his career with a Harley-Davidson XR750. And that particular motorcycle, his motorcycle, is now on display at the Smithsonian National Museum of American History, because I think there's a bunch of different buildings, but
yeah.
It's the National Museum of American History, and so you can go there and see it right now.
Man, if you make it into the Smithsonian, pretty much for anything, you can consider yourself as an American, an icon.
Oh, sure, and you know what? I totally believe that should be there. I mean, I really think so, because I think he touched enough people during his career that I think that it has a place there. I really do.
Scott, what about the people? What about the listeners who are tuned in right now saying, oh, no, I missed it. The days of Evel Knievel are gone.
They're not gone. That's the thing. There's one. There's a festival in his hometown, Butte, Montana.
Uh-huh.
And it's called Evel Knievel Days, aptly enough. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a whole weekend or maybe even a long weekend of motorcycle stunts and parades and just celebrating all things Evel Knievel, I guess.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a neat thing. So, I don't know. If I'm ever out in that area, I definitely want to go to it. How about you? Would you like to go out there and see the show?
You know what? I would love to. And I think it might take us a little while to get to Montana because we have so many other exciting things we're going to cover. But for our listeners, you guys, please let us know if you've been to this festival out there in Butte, Montana. And if you just can't get enough of motorcycle stunts, motorcycles in general, all things automotive, please remember to check in with Scott's blog on the homepage or send us an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.